Sarah quite well. She got her, and please correct me, Sarah, if any of this is wrong, because, again, I'm reading your bio. She got her PhD at the University of Leicester. They've been a really productive group on Cassini, doing a lot of fundamental research that relates to the magnetosphere and the aurora. And then after that, she went and did a stint, I think it was several years, in Japan, working for the Japanese Space Agency, JAXA. And now she's back. She's settled down for the time being and is at the University of Lancaster, which I believe is on the west coast of England, in the north.
That's right.
And she's been really instrumental in coordinating the auroral observations, doing great science with the data. She was an integral part of an auroral campaign that we had last spring, and this spring we'll have another one. And she'll be using the Cassini data for those observations, as well as the Hubble Space Telescope. She's TI on a program.
This is the conference coordinator. I just want to remind all parties, today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. If you wish to mute your phone, it is star 6 to mute, star 6 to unmute, and you may proceed.
Oh, so I'm so sorry, Lou. I totally forgot to get back to you. All right. So anyway, you've got the warning. Don't say anything bad on the phone. If you have background noise, it's star 6. Other than that, Sarah, I'll hand it over to you.
Okay. Hi, everyone. Thank you for calling in, and thanks for the nice introduction, Marcia.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to tell you a bit about some recent results from Cassini looking at Saturn's aurora. And as we go through, hopefully on the slide, you'll see the slide number in the bottom corner so we can check that everyone's on the same page. Okay, so we call the aurora nature's light show because it's this really intriguing display of light from a planet's atmosphere. So if we move to slide number 2 in the presentation, this is an outline of what I'm going to talk to you about for the next half an hour or so. So we're interested in how the solar wind, how the energy coming from the sun affects Saturn's magnetosphere, and I'll tell you why we care about that. I'll show you some nice pictures of Saturn's aurora, which give us a global view of what's happening in the near space environment. And I'll show you some recent Cassini discoveries that have been made over the last year. And this leads on to what we're looking for next. And as Marcia mentioned, we've got these two auroral campaigns coming up. There's one last year which we're still analysing, and there's one this year as well. If you go to slide number 3, this is the science objective, so what we're trying to find out. And at the top there, you've got a quote from the Cassini mission objective. And this is to characterise the structure of the magnetosphere, its interactions with the solar wind, Saturn's moons and rings. So the picture there shows you the interaction between the sun and a planet's magnetosphere. So the sun's atmosphere is constantly streaming away into space and filling up the heliosphere. And with it, it carries the sun's magnetic field. So you've got this extended atmosphere of charged particles and magnetic field. And now when that hits an obstacle like a planet's magnetosphere, so a planet with a magnetic field, it sort of bends around that, and you can see that through the lines shown in that figure. So we're studying how the energy from the sun spreads through the solar system and how it affects the local environment of the planet. So if you look at slide number 4, this is a nice illustration of Saturn's magnetosphere. So the magnetosphere is the region which contains and is controlled by a planet's magnetic field. Now, so you can see the solar wind, so this plasma coming out from the sun is coming in from the left-hand side. And then in the middle there, you've got Saturn itself with its rings, and this kind of orange colour shows you the plasma inside Saturn's magnetosphere. And the darker, well, the thicker white line there shows you the magnetopause, and this is the outer boundary of Saturn's magnetosphere. So this is where the solar wind interacts with the internal environment. So we'll be looking at processes happening at the magnetosphere. So moving on to slide number 5, this is the solar wind interaction. And again, you've got this schematic in the top left, which shows, reminding you how this stuff is streaming away from the sun through space and impacting on the planetary environment. And then we've got a schematic on the right-hand side, this line drawing, and this shows you how the magnetic field lines can interact with each other. So the one labelled BIMF, this is the interplanetary magnetic field that's coming in from the left-hand side. And then you can see the planet with its magnetic field lines joining the two poles on the right. And at the magnetopause, at this boundary, the planet's magnetic field lines can break open and connect with the interplanetary field, which is in the solar wind. And this gives us what we call open field lines. So if you look at the field lines with the numbers 2, 3, and 4 at the top of that figure, you can see that they've got one end attached to the planet and the other end is extending off into space in the solar wind. So basically the point of showing you this is to emphasize that the solar wind does interact with the planetary environment. It kind of stirs the planetary plasma by moving these magnetic field lines around. If you go to slide number 6, again, the solar wind interaction. This allows particles and energy to be exchanged between the magnetosphere and the surrounding space. So this is really how this atmosphere of the sun can affect a planet's local environment. So one question we can ask is, if the solar wind conditions change, for example, if the speed of the solar wind, its pressure, or the orientation of that magnetic field change, then can we expect the interaction with the magnetosphere to change? And of course, although Cassini's great, it's one tiny spacecraft in this huge region of space. So how can we see these changes happening? If you look at slide number 7, this is the answer to my question. This is how can we see these changes happening, and that's by looking at Saturn's aurora. So you've got three examples here of the aurora looking at different wavelengths, and these were all taken by Cassini. So at the top left, you've got Saturn's ultraviolet aurora in the southern hemisphere, and that was seen by Cassini UVs. And the middle panel shows you Saturn's infrared aurora, but false colour in green, and that was seen by Cassini VIMS instrument. And then the bottom one on the left shows you the visible wavelength aurora seen by Cassini ISS. So that's what you would see with your eyes if you were on the night side of Saturn. So if you move to slide number 8, this is telling you about how Saturn's aurora are generated. So the aurora are emissions of light from a planet's atmosphere, and they're caused when charged particles crash into the atmosphere and they excite it and they cause it to glow. So the particles travel down the magnetic field lines, as shown in this schematic. And so the aurora, where you see the auroral emission, that's telling you where the footprint of a magnetic field line is. So we're seeing a picture of what the magnetic field looks like in the ionosphere. If we go to slide number 9, at the bottom there are three examples of perhaps more familiar aurora. These are the Earth's aurora. So as you said, particles crash into a planet's atmosphere, causing it to glow. And we know from what I've said already that you see the aurora Earth and Saturn, but they're seen at all the magnetized planets, including Jupiter, Uranus, and Neptune, and also at Jupiter's moon Ganymede, which has its own magnetic field. So the aurora occur in the polar regions at the footprints of the magnetic field lines, and they usually form an oval shape around the pole. So the picture in the middle shows you an image of the aurora seen from the ground in Alaska and this beautiful green light that sort of wobbles through the sky. On the bottom left, if we're moving up in altitude, this is the aurora seen from a photo taken from the International Space Station. And here you can see the vertical extent of the aurora, so it's what we call the auroral curtain coming up out of the atmosphere. And then finally on the bottom right, this is an example of a global image of the aurora seen from the image satellite. So this was in orbit even further away from the Earth, and so it could look back and get this view of the whole oval around the pole. So if you move down to the next slide, this is now looking at aurora through the solar system. So at the top left, you've got the Earth with the southern aurora. Then we've got the beautiful UV aurora seen at Saturn with its rings at the top right. Bottom left, we've got an example of Jupiter with its ultraviolet emission around the northern poles. And then bottom right, this is an example of Ganymede's auroral emission taken from the Hubble Space Telescope. So moving on to slide number 11, this is showing you at the bottom the different components of Saturn's aurora. So overall, you can see there's this kind of oval shape around the pole. So these are two views which were taken by Cassini-UVIS, and in both of them you're looking down onto the northern pole and the direction towards the sun is off to the left. So you can see there's this bright oval shown by the kind of orange and yellow colours. And then at lower latitudes, so moving away, you can see this spot related to the Enceladus moon. And also there's an arc coming off the aurora towards higher latitude. And this is what we call a poleward arc, or a bifurcation, which means it's a splitting in two of the auroral oval. So moving down to slide number 12, this is the same view, but now I've circled the dayside region of the aurora. So these are the auroral emissions at the front, which map to the front of the magnetosphere. So this is the region where the solar wind is really impacting on Saturn's magnetosphere. So this is where we might expect to see the direct interaction. And then moving down to slide number 13, I've now circled the opposite side. So this is the night side region, and that's where you had those long stretched out field lines. So if we move to slide 14, this tells us a bit about what science we can do using Cassini. So Cassini has a wealth of different instruments, which include those which measure the local environment. So for example, particle detectors, they measure the magnetic field and the electric field. But it also has these images which can look from a distance and take pictures at different wavelengths. So this is remote sensing, the bigger picture. So because Cassini's got all these instruments on it together, this means it can tell us simultaneously what's happening very close to the spacecraft and how that fits in with what's happening much further away. And a great example of this is the auroral imaging, which I'm going to show you in more detail. And looking at these images with the simultaneous measurements of the magnetic field and the particles to see how they relate to each other. And then the last point on this slide just mentions that Cassini's been in orbit around Saturn for nearly 10 years already, and this allows us to study very long-term trends in the aurora and its response to the different solar wind conditions. So now I want to just go through some examples of recent Cassini science looking at auroral studies. So on slide 15, the title is Aurora and Energetic Particles. And this is an image of Saturn's infrared aurora in the northern hemisphere, which was taken on in November 2008. And again, your view is looking down on the northern pole, but this time the direction towards the sun is at the bottom. And that's the orientation that you'll see in all of the following plots. So the direction towards the sun is at the bottom now. The dawn side is on the left and the dusk side is on the right. So you can see this is a mosaic of images taken by Cassini-VIMS on this day. And there's kind of an oval shape generally around the pole, but you can also see these very bright arcs which are moving poleward in that bottom region of the image. And at the same time that Cassini-VIMS took that image, Cassini was sitting on the magnetic field lines, which mapped down into that region. So those magnetic field lines had their footprint in that part of the ionosphere. So now if we move to slide 16, this is looking at the same interval, but now comparing that auroral image in the bottom with the in situ measurements that Cassini instruments made. So this is a time series, so along the x-axis you've got time, it's 12 hours, and then the different panels show the measurements from the different instruments. So at the top you've got the flux of energetic electrons, the second panel you've got the lower energy electrons, the third panel you've got the wave power, so this is electric waves that Cassini detected, the fourth panel you've got the protons that were detected, and finally in the bottom panel you've got electric currents, which are measured actually using the magnetometer data. So in those top three, basically the colour shows you the intensity of what was observed in the different particles and waves. And so you can see that it's a very bursty nature. You can see these pulses in all of the different data sets. And what's interesting is that these particles were coming out of the ionosphere. So Cassini can determine which way they're travelling. And all of these were seen coming out of the ionosphere. And this is interesting because earlier we said that the aurora are caused by electrons travelling down into the atmosphere. So you'd expect to see energetic stuff travelling down. But here we're seeing at the same time energetic things coming up. And so we suggested that maybe these bursts are related to not just the bright auroral arcs, but also the dark stripes in between them. If we move to slide 17, this is a second example showing a sequence of images of the aurora. And now this is a sequence from July 2008, about 10 hours of observations. And these are the UV aurora seen by the UVIS instrument, so ultraviolet wavelength. And basically what you can see from this is that over just a few hours, the aurora was very variable. You can see the intensities changing, represented by the colour, but also the shape is changing a bit as well. You see this spot appear at the bottom region of the second image, and then that fades away again. So looking at slide 18, this is a schematic of how of what Cassini was seeing, where Cassini was at the same time that it took those images. So if you look at panel A, first of all, you can see Saturn with its rings illustrated, and this is not to scale, I should point out. Then the dashed line shows the magnetopores, so the boundary of the magnetosphere. You've got the interplanetary magnetic field carried by the solar wind, labelled IMF, that's coming in from the left. And then the rest of the arrowed lines show you the magnetic field lines connected to Saturn. And the yellow dot that's just inside the magnetopores, that illustrates where Cassini was at this time. So it was just inside the magnetopores. And during this interval, it measured electrons escaping, so travelling away from Saturn. 3 hours later, if you look at panel B, this is what the situation looked like. So now Cassini was just outside the magnetopores. You can see the yellow dot is just outside the magnetopores. But again, it was still detecting electrons escaping from Saturn's magnetosphere. And this suggests that these field lines at this time were open to the solar wind. So going back to that schematic at the beginning, you can picture that the solar wind has impacted on the magnetosphere and then opened up these field lines so that plasma can be lost along them. So if you go to slide number 19 now, this shows you a couple of examples of the aurora taken at the time corresponding to those schematics. So we can ask what auroral features were seen at the footprint of those magnetic field lines. And on the left, you see this brightening of the arc in the bottom left corner. So this is the dayside aurora at the front of the magnetosphere. And this is a signature of the coupling that we were talking about, so the interaction between the solar wind and the planet's magnetic field. And in panel B on the right, you can now see there are these two red arcs that are just moving a little bit poleward, so a little bit towards the centre of the oval, again on the day side. And these look more like sort of as if there'd been bursts of activity. So instead of a continuous auroral oval, it's now starting to break and split, and you've got these poleward bits. So the summary from this study was that the solar wind interaction is changing with time, and again this was revealed only by the combination of the plasma measurements at the same time as the auroral imaging. So if you go on to slide number 20, this is a third study which was done last year by Radiotti and co-workers. You can just see her name at the bottom there. So again, this is the sequence of auroral images taken by Cassini UVIS. So you can see the oval around the northern pole, and they've labelled these two arcs, A and B, with the yellow arrows on each of these images. And if you look at the intensity of these, you can see that their brightness is changing over the observing interval. So they're actually observed to brighten and then dim, and then brighten and then dim again. And this was in just a few hours. So they suggested in this study that this is related to repeated breaking of the planetary field lines. And every time that happens, it produces a flash in the aurora. And so what this means is that the solar wind keeps interacting with the same planetary magnetic field lines and produces these different signatures. So the last case study I want to show you is on slide 21 with the title Aurora Across the Spectrum. And this is from January 2009, and it's when an interval when all of Cassini's remote sensing instruments were staring at the planet's southern polar region. So A and B there show you the view looking towards the southern pole and what was observed at ultraviolet wavelengths, so that was seen by Cassini users. The red one, panel C, is the infrared aurora seen by Cassini VIM. Cassini can also measure the radio emission, and that's what's shown in panel D, so they saw radio emission coming from the same region. And finally, in E, on the right-hand side, they saw a blob of energetic plasma moving through the magnetosphere. So you're not only seeing emission in the ionosphere, but you're seeing enhanced plasma in the magnetosphere as well. So expect coupling between those two. And in this study, they actually saw that this blob was rotating around the planet. It wasn't just fixed, it was rotating. So moving to slide 22, we're interested, going back to the beginning, in the role of the sun. And all of these observations that I've just shown you show the influence of the sun on Saturn's magnetosphere and, therefore, on its atmosphere. So we can ask, what happens if the sun's activity increases? On slide 23, you can see this. The image shows you a plot of sunspot number. So this is an indication of the activity level of the sun over a few years from 1995 and going up to this month, and then you can see the predicted curve onto 2020. So the solar activity has an 11-year cycle, and there's a grey arrow at the bottom of that plot which shows you the interval when those previous auroral observations were made. So that was when the solar activity was at a minimum from 2006 to 2010. But now we're at solar maximum and the sun is much more active, although not as active as it was in the previous cycle 11 years ago. So moving to slide 24, now that the sun's a lot more active, what can we do? What do we want to find out? So in early last year, Cassini moved into an inclined orbit around Saturn again. So that means it's got a better view of the aurora as it was passing over the northern and southern hemispheres. And this was actually the best view of the aurora since 2009. So this is really valuable data. So in spring last year, there was a large auroral campaign, which we put together. And this was monitoring Saturn's aurora using Cassini. We had observations from the Hubble Space Telescope looking at the ultraviolet aurora, and also from ground-based infrared telescopes, for example, NASA's IRTF, which is shown in the picture at the bottom. So what are the aims of the aurora campaign? If you look at slide 25, we want to discover how the solar wind drives Saturn's magnetosphere and how it changes the aurora when the solar activity is high. So this is an example of images on the right-hand side of Saturn's aurora taken in 2004. And you can see, these are taken a couple of days apart in each case, and the aurora changes. It becomes much brighter and much thicker, and then it decreases again and goes back to a quiet oval. And at the time that these observations were made, these were made by the Hubble Space Telescope, Cassini was in the solar wind upstream of Saturn, so it was measuring the solar wind that then went on to hit Saturn's magnetosphere. And so in the two panel line plots underneath those images, the black one shows the solar wind speed, and then the bottom one shows you the interplanetary magnetic field strength. So you can see that sometime on day 26, there was a sharp increase in the solar wind speed and in the interplanetary magnetic field. And the result of that can be seen in the two auroral images in the middle. This is what we call an auroral storm. So in response to that change in solar wind, the aurora brightened, it moved to higher latitudes, and then it formed a spiral, and then it went back to a quiet oval. And these have been observed a couple of times when high-pressure regions crash in the solar wind crash into Saturn. And if you go to slide 26, this is now focusing on the smaller scale features, so like the arcs I showed you from the earlier studies. So we're looking at the region of the aurora that maps directly to where the solar wind is hitting the magnetosphere on the day side. And we've got these three examples of quite small-scale arcs and spots. So we said that these are signatures of the solar wind interaction, but what can we expect to see when the solar activity is even higher? Will we see bigger signatures? Will they be brighter? Will we see them more often? Or even will we see something different that we haven't seen before? So slide 27 shows you one other aim and something that was really special about the Aurora campaign from last year. And this was an opportunity to compare the northern and southern aurora at the same time. So the picture on the left, where you can see Saturn in blue with the rings around it, this was the best simultaneous view of Saturn's northern and southern aurora that we'd had so far. This was taken by Hubble in 2009. But now, so that was at equinox when the rings were sort of edge-on to us, view from Earth. But now we're moving towards northern summer at Saturn. So the northern hemisphere is now tilted towards it, so Hubble can observe the northern aurora. But, of course, Cassini is orbiting around the whole magnetosphere, so it gets to see the southern hemisphere as well. And so the very badly stuck-together plots on the right-hand side show you just an impression of the kind of view we can get. So Hubble looking at the northern aurora while Cassini is looking at the south. And that's what we did in the spring of last year and what we're hoping to do again later this year. So slide 28 then just lists some of the more specific aims of the Aurora campaign. And this is really just an advert that this data is still being analysed and there are lots of good results which hopefully will be coming out quite soon. So slide 29 then is a summary of what I've been talking about. So we're interested in the interaction between the solar wind and Saturn's magnetosphere, and it's important for understanding how energy and mass is transferred throughout our solar system. It's difficult to measure this at a single point just using one spacecraft because the regions of space that are involved are just huge. So instead we can use auroral images to give us the global picture of what's happening instead of just one point measurement. And then finally on slide 30, I've shown examples of how Saturn's aurora show a very variable interaction with the solar wind. So I showed examples of these auroral arcs associated with very energetic ions and electrons. You saw that these arcs change over time, both in their shape and also in their intensity. We saw that some arcs that flashed. And there were also examples of blobs that rotated around with the planet. So the question we're now interested in is how will the aurora look at solar maximum? Will we see more of these bright polar events, so inside the main auroral oval? And finally, the advert again, the aurora campaign results are coming soon, so please stay tuned for those. Thank you.
That's great, Sarah. Thank you very much. Great graphics, too. I have several slides of yours I'm going to hopefully steal. Are there questions out there for Sarah about the aurora?
I have a question which I'm almost certain will be asked by general audience members if I showed them some of this stuff. This is David in Seattle. I'm a little curious about the axis of rotation of Saturn and how it might influence the appearance or intensity of the auroras, whether they happen at the same time or whether they're bigger or smaller, depending upon the tilt of the planet towards the sun.
Well, that's a really good question.
Yeah, that's why I asked.
Yeah, and that's another aspect of what we're trying to look at, because so I've been talking about sort of solar activity, but of course another important aspect is the season of the planet. So I just said very briefly that now we're moving towards northern summer, so the northern hemisphere is tilted towards the sun and the Earth.
So it seasonally, is the aurora more likely to happen in the north or south? Or does it, like I asked, does it happen at the same time but with varying intensity?
I think the latter, but really the details of this are still being researched. So this is
Which is exactly what you're doing right now, right?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it might be just that the intensity is different. There's generally always an auroral oval of some intensity, but it might be different in the northern and southern hemisphere depending on the influence of the sun, which hemisphere is tilted towards the sun.
Okay, I've had the general public ask me this question, and I'm not really sure how to answer it. The hexagonal standing wave jet stream in either pole, is that connected to the aurora in any way, or has any connection ever been researched?
So it has been researched. For example, people on the Cassini-Vimms team are looking at this hexagon, and there doesn't seem to be any link so far with the aurora. So they lie at roughly the same latitude, but there are very different altitudes.
Uh-huh.
So it's not clear how they could really be linked across such a huge region in the atmosphere.
So it's just more of a physical coincidence that they're next to each other.
That's how it seems. That's the current state of research, yes. It's more of a coincidence.
Because the reason I ask is I've actually had some general public questions. They've actually asked whether the hexagonal shape is an artifact of computer image processing that didn't quite match.
Wow.
And you and I know that's not true, but the fact that it is a weird shape is still somewhat of a mystery.
Yeah, I think it's quite fascinating, and it's at lower altitude than I normally study, so unfortunately I don't know a great deal about it, but yeah, it certainly looks unreal because of its regular shape.
I don't know anything about it either, but I've seen these fluid dynamic simulations that have convection on cylinders, columnar convection, and they predict a shape like a hexagon. So I think
there's some sort of a standing wave periodicity that just sets itself up depending upon the intensity of the fluid dynamics.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've heard about that.
This
before.
Is Scott Edgington, the deputy project scientist. If you plot that hexagon on a latitude-longitude grid, it's basically a sine wave. So the hexagon shape manifests itself when you project that onto a 2D surface. But it is a sine wave, and hence a jet stream.
It's not
really
a hexagon. It just looks that way because of how it gets
projected.
So it is a computer image artifact.
It's a hexagon.
No. It's a projection. So if you were viewing it with your eye, you would see a hexagon. But if you took that image and plotted it on the correct
theater projection,
grid, you would see a sine wave.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. Right.
Yeah. So it's not a computer artifact at all. It's a you take a camera, a photo, you're going to see a hexagon.
This is Jonathan from Fayetteville, of North Carolina. If I were to do a side-by-side comparison between aurora on Earth and the aurora on Saturn in a planetarium show, what differences should I point out that are the most important?
Good question.
Let me think. So I guess one is the shape of the aurora.
Mm.
So So Earth's aurora is generally always this oval, but at Saturn it's sometimes made up of just bright arcs or even a spiral that we saw in one of the aurora storm slides. You can talk about the different wavelengths that it's emitted at. So most of the observations of Saturn's aurora that we look at are at ultraviolet wavelengths. And if you look at a movie of Saturn's aurora, you'll see features rotating around with the planet as well. And that's something that's quite distinct to Saturn compared to the Earth.
So what was it that you was? It's a little bit soft. It's hard to hear you. You said which region, that last thing you said was which things are quite unique to Saturn?
These rotating features.
Rotating features.
Yeah. So okay. You'll see like intensity blobs that rotate around in the direction of planetary rotation.
Is it about the same speed as the planetary rotation?
Yes, a bit slower.
Bit slower than the planetary rotation. Okay. Thank you.
And there are also things. I mean, Uliana often talks about the color too, giving you indications of different atmospheric constituents at different altitudes. So
yes.
That's another
Thank
way
you.
Of
difference. Yeah.
Yep. So I think at Earth you most commonly see aurora in green with sometimes red, but at Saturn, if you see the visible aurora, it's red with a bit of purple.
Oh, because of the hydrogen and helium mainly?
Yes.
Okay.
I've seen Earth aurora that was also yellow, or is that just a pale green?
Oh, interesting. It could be a shade of green, I suppose.
Yeah. You sometimes see a red Earth aurora, yeah.
Yeah, red.
There are other questions for Sarah?
This is Don Mitchell. There are also some faint auroral features at Saturn that are connected with the moon Enceladus, and of course there's nothing equivalent to that at Earth.
Yes.
Good point. Thank you, Don.
That brings up this other topic that came up. We're putting together some press materials on the aurora, and in the press release, Mimas crept in, which I was surprised. So I guess some people on one of the Cassini teams were making a connection with Mimas, which, of course, would imply some electromagnetic interaction. And so it was all very strange to me. But I don't know. Can you comment on that, Sarah?
Yeah, well, we talked about this briefly before, and so the reason Enceladus has a spot is because it has a conducting environment, and so to see a spot of another moon means it has to be electrically conducting, and so that tells you something about its interior or its atmosphere, and that's maybe something we didn't expect from Mimas. So I'm really interested to hear more about this.
Yeah, me too. That was neat.
Yeah, there's a kind of this is, I think Wayne Pryor has been talking about that, and there's a peculiar, but, you know, he's documented quite a few occasions in which the aurora at high latitudes, well above the connection to Mimas where it should connect, is pulsating and active, but that region rotates around at a rate that follows quite closely to Mimas's rotation rate about the planet, and not just the rate, but it's also located right at the longitude where Mimas currently is when the observations are made. So
oh, that's interesting.
It's
I mean, you'd kind of expect it to rotate at the same period because it's one of, you know, the closest.
Roughly that period, right? but he keeps, at least, you know, what he's postulating and has seemed to notice in the data is that it's really sort of phase lock with Mimas.
Oh, neat.
I have a question about that. Is the interaction between Mimas and Saturn analogous or similar to the interaction between Jupiter and Io?
Sarah, you can take that.
Or is it like a completely different animal?
Well, we're learning about this Mimas thing. This is all new. But if you look at Enceladus, then the interaction between Enceladus and Saturn is more similar to what is analogous to the Jupiter-Io relationship.
Yeah. Okay, so Enceladus and Saturn and Jupiter and Io are the more similar pair-ups. Okay.
Yeah.
I think
right.
based on what we know at this point. So
far.
Yeah, and Jupiter has such interactions with Ganymede as well, and I think Callisto. But so those again are like Enceladus. The Mimas thing is peculiar.
Is Titan doing anything, or is it too far away?
There's no direct signature of Titan in the aurora, but it's usually right out in the outer region of the magnetosphere. It's sitting under that main auroral emission, and they're kind of in the same place. And so it might be having some effect, but
it's too small to look at, I guess, so far.
Yeah, it might be a faint signature that gets buried by the main auroral stuff that's already going on.
That would make sense.
Other questions? Sounds like a no. Well, thank you very much, Sarah. It was a lovely presentation. I know with magnetospheric stuff, it's hard to, convey the science in a way that the public can appreciate it. But you've got really nice graphics and schematics. So thanks for going to that effort.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
Okay. All right. So I guess we'll call it a day. I think wrap up the Charm Telecon. I'm sure there's something I'm supposed to announce, but I can't remember what it is. I think Sean is doing these quarterly now, so it'll be probably a few months before you'll hear about the next one. So thanks, everybody, for dialing in.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.